Oi, you. It's time for another episode of Dorothy and the Dealer. Let's tune into the conversation.
Okay, John DeMartini, fantastic to have you back on the podcast. As ever, we love chatting away to you.
How many times have we done this? We've done this a few times, and every time we get so much awesome information for ourselves and for our listeners. So thank you so much for joining us, Dr. John. How are you?
Thank you for that. I'm doing great.
Yeah?
That's fantastic. That's fantastic. Where are you right now?
I'm in Houston, Texas.
Great. Fantastic. Good part of the US, good part of the world. And you're involved in a couple of movies and doing that sort of stuff at the moment, which is also very exciting.
Yeah, we're doing some filming, and we're doing a lot of podcasts and doing some seminars. And then I'm back on, I leave in just a few days back to the Middle East. So I'll be back over there doing programs.
Is your schedule just as hectic as it's always been, John?
I think it's been more. We've been very busy.
Wow.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's really good. So, John, there's a lot happening in the world. I want to talk really money, finances, vision, mission, and that connection between our inner world and our outer world. But can we start with one of the things that I speak to the clients about all the time is that, you know, we have an intrinsic link between our inner world and our outer world. And what we see is happening is that science is allowing us to understand that, you know, what the mystics were talking about a long time ago, science now is allowing us to actually prove, you know, that there is an intrinsic link, and when we're doing what we love, that it is actually affecting the outer world. Can you lean into that conversation for us a bit and help us to clarify that?
Because sometimes, you know, you can say those things, but it doesn't make, what we wanted from you is to help, like, scientifically, like, explain exactly why, what's going on, so that it's like, it sounds a bit airy fairy if you're just hearing that on a surface level.
Yeah, well,
level,
I sound like a mystic sitting in a cave in Tibet. But how do we, now we're able to, you know, we're able to bridge that gap. Can you help us with that?
Well, maybe get a little bit more clear on the specific question on that. So, because I could go for hours on that. So.
Okay. Good.
Okay. So what we feel about, we bring about, right? And
okay. So how does our thinking and our feelings impact things?
Yeah. And has it got an intrinsic link with what is, you know, with our you know, is our vibration colliding with particles and bringing about our environment and our reality? Because it hands a lot of responsibility back to the individual, right?
Yeah. What I'll try to do is start with some basic, really grounded things and work our way up.
Okay, mm-hmm. Awesome.
Good idea.
Every human being has a set of priorities, a set of values, things that are most to least important in their life. Whatever is highest on their value, which is an intrinsic value, they are spontaneously inspired to fulfill. Whatever is lower on their values, they require extrinsic motivation to get them to take action to do it. They need a reward to do it or a punishment if they don't do it. Mm-hmm. Just like a young boy who loves video games, his mom doesn't have to remind him to do video games, but has to remind him to do his homework.
Yeah.
Now, because of this unique set of values that each of us has, whenever we are having our attention and intention congruent and aligned with what that highest value is, our awareness and our actions are more spontaneous. Mm-hmm. We're able to perceive and act more spontaneously.
Yeah.
In the brain, there are evoked potentials that are extrinsically from senses, and there are spontaneous potentials within the brain that fire off intrinsically in the brain when we're congruent, mm-hmm. when we're living congruently with what we value most. In the thalamus, which is part of the diencephalon, there is a filtering gating process in the pulmonary nuclei. And sensory information from our environment is automatically filtered through that to discern whether it is something that's congruent with our highest values or not. If it is, it goes into the cortex and we're aware of it. If not, it goes into the amygdala and we react to it before we think.
Yeah.
So the pulmonary nuclei allows us to filter out and gate out with a selected bias the information that is going to be most pertinent to what we're intending and attending to. Mm-hmm. So if you're a mother that has your highest value is your children, and you're 35 and you have three children under the age of five, and you are absolutely focused on being a mom, if you were to go into a mall, you would spot children's clothes, children's health items, children's educational items, children's entertainment items. But you wouldn't notice in that same mall business books, computers, what stock to buy and which companies are busy, you know, what Apple is selling. You would filter your reality with a selective bias attention and have an attention surplus order in the area that's highest on your value. So you would perceive, because of your values, an attention deficit in the areas that are low, but an attention surplus in the things that are high. And you will spot in the environment things that resonate with what your dominant thought is. And your innermost dominant thought will always be a reflection of what you value most. Mm-hmm. So the individual that is setting goals to see and to act or perceive and act in their highest values will automatically have an advantage over anyone who's trying to do something lower in their values.
Right.
The reason being is because of this filtering mechanism, they're able to see opportunities that the other one can't see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The young boy who loves video games can see opportunity in the video games, but he can't see the opportunities in his chores.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, with that, the synchronicity goes up. Anytime you go up in your hierarchy of values and live by highest values, it's like a funnel, and you concentrate time from a diffracted state of past and future into a present state. You become more present and more synchronous with the opportunities that are around you. So if you are setting a goal to attend or intend to something that's really highest on your value, you'll spot those opportunities. You'll feel that you're in an environment that is synchronous to what you're thinking. And you will resonate, literally resonate with your environment and feel that it's on the way, not in the way, just by the filtering mechanism of that area. Mm-hmm. Now, if it is if you're doing something that's low on your values, the blood glucose and oxygen goes out of the frontal cortex and goes into the amygdala. And the amygdala is a filtering mechanism that is trying to avoid predator and seek prey, avoid challenge and seek ease. So it automatically polarizes and biases and prejudices the information and creates infatuations with prey, which means you're conscious of the upsides and unconscious of the downside, or instincts away from predator, which is conscious of the downsides, unconscious of the upsides. So the moment you're doing something low in your value, you're filtering out half of the world, and you're literally not seeing opportunities. And therefore, you're reacting with incomplete information mindlessly instead of mindfully. Because when you're seeing all the opportunities, you feel mindful. You feel like, I'm grateful. That's why the executive center is called the gratitude center also, because you're grateful for what's happening. So from a very grounded neurological mechanism, if you're setting goals that are aligned and congruent with what you value most, you're having an increasing probability of having synchronicity. Now, your ontological identity revolves around what you value most. Your epistemological pursuit of knowledge excels in the area of your highest value. Your teleological purpose is a reflection of your highest value. So you feel that you're learning everything that's needed to fulfill what you as most meaningful, to fulfill what you feel your calling as an identity, to make the biggest difference, which is unique to your values in that path. So just from an exoteric perspective, that's a smart thing to do. But we also have bioresonation. Bioresonation means that every atom absorbs and emits light in a particular signature frequency. And each of its electron orbitals has a series of resonant frequencies that it absorbs and emits on. When it takes in and gets stimulated and goes to an excited state, it comes back down to its ground state and emits light. Those frequencies of light are very specific to every atom, every electron in the atom, every molecule, every biomolecule, and the collective molecules that make up our body and are therefore our body. just like our electroencephalograph gives off a overview, particularly in gamma waves where they have synchronicity in the brain, you have an overview of an expression of a frequency, 40 cycles per second, etc. It's a summation, a vectoral summation of all the activities of electronic ions going on in the brain. We can literally pick up and send out a vibration that is molecularly and atomically and structurally unique. Anything out there that's resonating with that is absorbing and emitting back. And the brain has got a receiving and broadcasting capacity to let it know what it's going on in its environment that we are both extraceptively and interoceptively able to pick up. We now know that the immune system, for instance, it used to be considered at one time an attacking system to foreign elements. So anything that's a foreign identity, it was supposedly attacked. That was the model for decades.
Yeah.
I've never been satisfied with that model. Since 44 years, I've been telling people that's not the model. They've now acknowledged it in mainstream immunology that the immune system is a feedback mechanism, a seventh sense, they call it now, Scientific American, a seventh sense taking internal microorganisms of all different types, bacteria, rickettsia, viruses, protozoas, worms, fungi, and giving the brain the exact ratios of each of these organisms in the body to maintain the microorganisms in proper ratios mm-hmm. to maintain homeostasis. Mm-hmm. And so if we perceive more challenge and support and get sympathetic dominated, our microbiome changes to try to create neurochemistries to bring us back into balance.
That's right. Very cool.
So our immune system is actually a feedback system helping us master our life. I'm a firm believer that every one of our symptoms, every one of our physiologic responses, every one of our sociologic responses, even our business responses are feedback mechanisms guiding us to authenticity. Now, that is not just extended to the immediate contact with customers.
So you're saying so the outer world is always feeding us back data to keep us into a state of homeostasis.
Homeostasis.
Right.
Walter Cannon wrote about this in his book, The Wisdom of the Body, 1932.
Yeah.
It's now more elaborate. But so the resonations that we deal with, the receiving and broadcasting, are homeostatic feedback systems to try to make biologic organisms master their efficiency and efficiency of survival.
Mm.
So you just mentioned there in business. So if people, what you're saying is simplified, if people are getting business challenges, it's because they are not doing, walked away or abandoned or given up what they love for business. So they've sold their soul for rock and roll. So
Sort of. Let me elaborate on.
Okay.
So let's say that you meet somebody that you infatuate with and you're conscious of their upsides and unconscious of their downsides.
Mm-hmm.
Relative to them, you're going to minimize yourself because you're putting them on a pedestal.
Yeah.
Anytime you exaggerate them and minimize you because you're too humble to admit what you see in them is inside you and have a deflective awareness instead of a reflective awareness, you're going to not be authentic because you're going to be minimizing yourself. You're not being you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, imagine yourself if you have a customer that you're exaggerating and you're minimizing yourself to, it's going to activate an altruistic response because you're going to fear losing the customer. So you'll sacrifice the profit for the customer to try to get you resentful enough to say, hey, I deserve better than that, to get that level back in level again. Awesome. Homeostasis.
Yeah,
awesome.
Now, if you're resentful to somebody and you hate the customer and you're self-righteous and you think you know better than the customer withdraws from you and you end up not making any sales, and then you come humbling yourself down and start to appreciate the customer in order to bring it to homeostasis.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But when you're resenting them and you're conscious of their downsides and unconscious upsides, you become conscious of your upsides and unconscious downsides. Now you're too proud to admit what you see in them inside you.
Mm-hmm.
And now you're exaggerating. You're not authentic.
Yeah.
Yep.
So anytime you go above or below who you are and exaggerate or minimize who you are, you create symptoms in your business, altruistic or narcissistic extremes, to homeostate you back into being who you are so you can create sustainable, fair exchange transactions.
Love it.
Love that.
Where both individuals want to continue business.
Wow.
Now, that's not just in business. That's the entire environment. Mm-hmm. If we get cocky, people bring us down, the tall poppy syndrome. If we get humble, people lift us up, the dull. Nature's trying to make people authentic. And so when we're sending out vibes, atomic, molecular, complex molecular, literally radio signals and infrared signals and visible signals out, anything that's resonate is a feedback mechanism to try to get us back into homeostasis. So our distribution of the spectrum, you might say, is balanced. Mm-hmm. We're back into our green.
Mm. So then when we, if now then we talk about, because one of the things we really wanted to cover as we talk to you today is about money and attracting more into your life, or attracting, you know, being able to deal with money in terms of what you've just said. Are you saying then that the more authentic that you are, the more that you will attract towards you?
Money is a measurement. Mm-hmm. Of authenticity and sustainable fair exchange.
Right.
Because if you try to give something for nothing, you're not going to want to continue to do business that way. You're mm-hmm. going to say, I deserve more than that.
Yep.
Yeah.
And if you try to get something for nothing, they're not going to want to do business with you anymore. Yep. So they're non-sustainables. It's you have alternating monologues, not a dialogue in those settings.
Yep.
You're speaking, they're not listening, they're speaking, you're not listening. Mm-hmm. But when you have sustainable fair exchange and you have authenticity or equanimity and equity between you and them, that's when you have the most power to create a business that's sustainable, where people are going to want to continue to do business. It's the least amount of effort to build the business, and it's the most profitable. Mm. Now, in that state, that is the mastery of business. But you also have to have a value on wealth building to have money eventually buy assets. If you don't have a objective to master money and have it work for you, you're going to keep buying consumables that depreciate in value and be working your whole life. Even though you're in sustainable fair exchange, you're going to be working your whole life and never have money working for you. Mm-hmm. So there's a necessity of both levels. The mastery of being yourself and authentic in business, because people love to do business with people they trust. That is a trust. I can only trust myself to be authentic.
Yeah.
I can't trust myself to live one way or the other long term. It's not mm-hmm. sustainable. Mm-hmm. You try to be infatuated with a new relationship and try to live in their values, because you're going to inject their values and try to live in their values, you won't sustain it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
If you get narcissistic and try to get other people to live in your values, they won't sustain it. Mm-hmm. So those are non-sustainables. But if you do fair exchange and create a sustainable business with equanimity and equity, authenticity, you now have a source of income that's mm-hmm. no limit. It's to the degree of your vision and to the degree of well enough how much you care about humanity to serve greater numbers of people. But at the same time, at that moment, when you're in equanimity, you feel most fulfilled. You feel most grateful. Mm-hmm. And you feel I deserve, because your self-worth is a reflection of how congruent you are with your highest value. And your highest value is where you're most objective and neutral and you're most congruent, most mm-hmm. authentic. So in that case, you have a higher probability, but no guarantee, but a higher probability of realizing, I would like to master money. I want it working for me. I don't want to have to work for it. Mm-hmm. You're out of your amygdala, which is immediate gratifying consumables for a fix. And you're now into long-term vision. Every time we live by higher values, our space and time horizons expand. We start thinking, instead of immediate gratification and impulses, we start thinking of intuitive, inspired visions and messages and missions in the world. And we get philanthropic. I always say money without meaning leads to debauchery, but money with meaning leads to philanthropy. Mm-hmm. So we automatically increase the probability of now investing in asset accumulation, where our money's working for us, so we're not having to work for money, it's working for us. Mm-hmm. And teaching people the science of that is not that difficult. Mm-hmm. Once it's structured and it's automated, so there's no emotion, it's just electronically done, and it's done at the speed of light, photons, mm-hmm. you build your wealth. Mm-hmm. Your job now is to go and do sustainable fair exchange, have it automated and electronically transferred and automated into buying assets, and leave it be. So, let it go, let it build its assets, and let compound interest do its eighth wonder of the world.
So this is why obviously the banks, fraternities, marketing companies, you know, they deliberately market to people's insecurities, right? That's the way in which they can get them to buy the products. Because I know from, you know, years ago, before I understood any of this and started to put this into play in my own life, whenever I was off vision, I was always, you know, trying to buy things to have that momentary hit. You know, that, you know, and then I'd get that hit and I'm like, fuck, you know, that's only like, and then I'm out doing the same thing again. And it was because I wasn't myself. Does that make sense? When I'm myself and when I'm doing what I love, I don't have this addiction to buy consumables and actually feel things.
When you're fulfilled, you don't need to fill your life from outside sources.
Right. And I think that the payoff I've seen over time with my own life is that has allowed me to use my time and my energy, to use my money to make more money, which allowed me the freedom to be able to do what I loved more. So it was a beautiful trifecta of, okay, if you have the revenue coming in, you're able to do what you love more. And when you're doing what you love more, you're affecting more people intrinsically around you, because people are looking at you going, fuck, how are you doing this?
It's the path of, as Aristotle said, it's the path of the golden mean, the path of true virtue.
Right. Okay, that's
insane. You know, you said something about the banks. Mm-hmm. Think about this. A bank will give you a credit card.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to make it look like you've earned it. Mm-hmm. It's privilege.
Mm-hmm.
You got to realize that about 10% of the gross income of a individual that has a credit card is usually sustained as a debt. So if they make $50,000 a year, they have $5,000 in debt on their credit card typically.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you get a credit card, you separate pleasure from pain. You go shop,
mm-hmm.
you get the pleasure, immediate gratification, retail therapy.
Right.
Then 30 days later, you get the pain.
Mm-hmm.
But not only that, if they allow you to pay the minimum amount so they can maximize the return off you in double digit returns. So you think you're just paying this minimum amount. You go, that's not that bad.
Mm-hmm.
But what it's doing is it's building up more debt.
Mm-hmm.
So you're now getting the pain separated from the pleasure. And anytime somebody separates pleasure from pain, they activate the amygdala, which makes it more addicting. And they end up making you now addicted to getting in debt.
Wow.
Now, on the same time, they go and get you an idea, go and live out of the city in the suburbs. So you have to then get a car.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So then you need a garage.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And now you need furniture and you need all this stuff. So all are debt oriented.
Yeah.
And the majority of people live their life in debt.
Yeah.
Just trying to, and the second they get out of debt, because they're so used to paying debt, mm-hmm. they get more in debt again.
100%. Yeah.
This might be a new repair in the bathroom or something. Mm-hmm.
And now they've groomed their children to do the same thing. Because in
our elementary schools and high schools are all geared to that mentality. Mm-hmm. It was never geared to how to be an entrepreneur, or how to be the 1%er. It's always geared to the drones. Now, and then they give you a privilege. They say, you've now earned the right. What I did, I worked in a bank. I was advisory board of a bank for a while.
Right.
And I learned a lot about what the privilege means.
Mm-hmm.
You would think that by paying off your debt on time every 30 days and not having any extended interest, that would be credit.
Mm-hmm.
Credit isn't that way. Credit is based on how much the bank made off you.
Yeah.
Right. Wow.
So then you've earned the right to get further in debt and pay off the debt with maximum returns to the bank.
Wow.
That's what the privilege is.
Wow. That's why they give you bigger cards and they say, because I've seen
it. Bigger cards, you've earned the right to get further in debt. Yeah. Now you can handle a bigger debt because you've been honoring the debt and paying us the most return.
Yeah. You're a good customer. This is why when you pay down your home, a week later, they're fucking ringing you and saying, hey, you want to buy another house? And hey, you want to get into more debt? Because they know you're a good customer.
They can't make money unless they've leveraged it that way.
Yeah.
You know, it's the fractional reserve banking.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not saying that's bad or good.
No, it is what it is.
But a wise individual, instead of living in their amygdala and letting the banks maximize their returns off you and have the big buildings and you have the little house, it's wiser to turn that around and maximize the return by, before you ever buy, have an agenda of what you're going to buy and live in your forebrain and think of what is the highest priority action or purchase to maximize my life and fulfillment so I don't impulse buy. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just like eating. If you live to eat, you're going to be impulse eating. If you eat to live, to maximize your performance, you're going to select what you're eating and only eat what's necessary to maximize your return. Mm-hmm. If you fill your day with very high priority, amazing things that are very important the next day to do, you don't pig out the night before. You don't overdrink. Mm-hmm. So if you're not filling your day with high priority actions that inspire, your day is more vulnerable to the amygdala of impulse and instincts and immediate gratification and consumerism. Mm. And you're more likely to be subjectively biased and exaggerate the neighbor and minimize the neighbor with in-group, out-group biases, which then minimize and exaggerate you, put you in instability, make you do brain offloading, make other people decide for you, compare yourself to the Joneses, inject their values, and now buy things you don't even care about to prove to people who don't care. Then buy a house. Why this? Now, one quarter of a house is storage of depreciable liabilities. Think about the closets. All the closets have clothes that aren't producing. They're going down in value.
Yeah.
The garage is filled with stuff that goes down in value. The car is going down in value.
Yeah.
Everything is consumables going down in value. And a quarter of a house, if you buy a $1 million house in Australia, you can't buy anything less than $1 million.
Yeah.
You get a $1 million house, that's $250,000. You pay that out over 30 years or something, that's $750,000 you're paying to store depreciables and consumables without even knowing you're doing that.
Which kind of represents a part of a person's, I've always found over time, a part of a person's mind. Do you know what I mean? There's a part of your mind that...
The reflection.
And your outer world is your inner world. You know, I say to the clients all the time, have you got a room that you just put up? Yeah. Go get rid of that room. Get that stuff out of your life, you know, because you're going to change your mind. That's fantastic, John. I absolutely love what you just said there. Millie, pull us up another question.
I want to talk about, before we go into some other stuff, I want to talk about the fact that therefore financial growth is spiritual growth and how they connect.
Mm-hmm.
What's the correlation between financial growth and spiritual growth?
Well, they're inseparable.
Mm-hmm.
And I love sharing this because so many people have a religious, dogmatic mothers, fathers, preachers, teachers, idea that somehow money is not spiritual. I don't know how that came, other than to say that true spirituality is authenticity.
Mm-hmm.
When you live by your highest value and you spontaneously are inspired to act and do something with sustainable fair exchange, it's meaningful. Think about the most fulfilling moments of your life. And it's, I guarantee I've asked millions of people, what's the most fulfilling moment in your life? And it's when I've done something that's made a contribution to somebody else's life and they said thank you and it brought tears to my eyes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep.
So when you're being of sustainable fair exchange service with people, that's meaningful.
Mm-hmm.
And it's service. The axiological origins of the words goods and services that are involved in theology and economics come from the same roots in axiology, the study of values.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to be a good person and going to service at the churches, for instance, but you want to go out and buy goods and services.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the same origins. So anytime you're living by your highest value, your most authentic, your most objective, which means neutral, your most sustainable in transactions with fair exchange, your most grateful, you're doing something you love doing, you're inspired, you're enthused, you're the God within, you're enthused doing it. And you're present because you've extracted out the all of memory and imagination, which keeps you in the arrow of time and entropy and aging, as a result of storing on in the subconscious mind to all the imbalances of your perception in the amygdala. That's where the aging comes from.
Mm.
So the moment you're in your objective state and you're in equanimity and equilibrium, you've just extracted out space and time from your mind and become present. And when you're present, you're more certain because you don't have trepidations of the uncertainty principle because there's no space and time to have memory or imagination or to have position or momentum, which are the uncertainty principles by Heisenberg.
Mm.
You're now present. You're grateful. You're loving what you do. You're inspired. You're enthused. And now you're in a state where you're spiritually expressing your mission. Your mission is that calling that you want to do that means something to you that also serves. in sustainable ways. So spirituality and economics are inseparable. They're one and the same thing.
So what I notice a lot when we talk to our clients and, you know, just across the board, people get to a certain level with their finances. They get to a certain level. So they've obviously they've accessed a level of authenticity within themselves to be able to reach a certain level of growth within their finances. But it seems to plateau, or it seems to, you know, there's this glass ceiling, this sense of inertia that they can't get past. And, you know, this is something that we commonly see. Can you speak to that in terms of what are the steps to be able to actually click into that space where you are authentic to such a degree that you can go to that next level?
Well, there's a number of things that people put in their place. I'll give an example. I have a gentleman that I knew that I worked with that was making $40,000 a month, about $500,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
And no matter what he did, he just for 3 years in a row, he couldn't break that.
Mm-hmm.
He came to the breakthrough experience.
Yeah, yeah.
And, in there, I started asking him some questions to try to figure out what it was. And I asked him, so if all of a sudden you go over $40,000, what's the anxiety? What's the fear? And what is the benefit of maintaining it at 40,000? I started asking questions that he hadn't asked himself.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden something came up that brought a tear to his eye, and he goes, oh my God. And then he heard something from his father. His father said, anybody that makes more than a certain amount is a crook.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So he had parts of his father that he infatuated with. He wanted to be like his father, an honorable man. But he had another part of his father that he resented because he didn't have the drive to be an entrepreneur.
Mm-hmm.
So he was both infatuated. So what we did is we went in there and, you know, leveled the playing field and dissolved the resentment over the parts he hated about his dad. It wasn't the entrepreneur and it didn't have the drive to push himself and was never really financially viable.
Yeah.
And the infatuation that he associated with honor. And we leveled the playing field by doing the method, the DeMartini method on that.
Right.
Once those were cleared and he felt love for his father, but not infatuation, because anytime you infatuate with a part of somebody, you inject that value in, which is sometimes called limited beliefs.
Hmm.
And anytime you resent, you avoid a certain activity. And anything you try to run away from, you keep running into by attracting people that push that button because you haven't balanced it and loved it.
Mm-hmm.
So once those were cleared, 200,000 within 3 months.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
200,000.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's another factor. So one is dissolving the subconsciously stored perceptions that are imbalanced associated with money. That's one that needs to be done. The second one is the cause.
Yeah.
If you have zero money in your pocket and you get a dollar, the value of that dollar is 100%.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
If you have $10 in your net worth and you get an extra dollar, it's 10%,
mm-hmm.
that additional dollar.
Yeah.
If you have $100, it's 1%. $1,000, it's 0.1%. $10,000, 0.01%. $1 million, 0.0%. $100,000, 0.001%. $1 million, 0.0001%.
Mm-hmm.
$10 million, 0.00001%. So that means that every time you accumulate money, the value of an additional dollar is going to diminish.
Mm-hmm.
When you have no money and you're in a bathroom at a gas station or something and you got to take a dump and all of a sudden you find out, oh crap, there's no paper. You're going to pull out your paper. If you're a billionaire, you don't mind pulling out a piece of paper and wiping your ass.
Mm-hmm.
But if you only got zero money and you only got $1 in your pocket, you're going to walk and chivvy over to the bathroom and stick your butt in the thing and wash it off because you're not going to mess up your dollar.
Yeah.
Now, in Australia, you might be able to rewash the dollar. I don't know. They've got a special dollar.
Classic.
Okay. So that means that as you accumulate wealth, the value of the additional dollar diminishes and diminishes and diminishes until it's insignificant.
Yeah.
Right.
So if you're not having a accelerating growth and a cause to earn additional dollars to counterbalance that devaluation of it, you'll plateau. And the glass ceiling is a plateauing mechanism because your cause isn't great enough to override the devaluation of the additional dollar.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So whenever I see people plateauing, we need to go in there and find out what's next on the bucket list that is bigger than themselves that they want to accomplish. You start out with yourself. You go to financial independence. You go to the family. You go to the community, the city, the state, the nation, the world. What's your cause? Mm-hmm. Unless you have a cause, it's a service to ever greater numbers of people, you'll plateau with your wealth.
Mm-hmm. So you're talking then about, you're talking about, we all subordinate at different levels. And when we first get, okay, this is what's most important to us. Now it's of service to us as an individual, then the family, then the community, then the country, da 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 da. And so your levels of subordination go up.
Yes.
As long as you're doing what you love and you can see its intrinsic connection to the service of humanity.
Because your confidence of walking your talk goes up and you're going, I'm capable of doing more.
Right. Okay.
Okay. More.
And I've noticed that when we're working with people, and even in my own life, is that as that happens, people just naturally gravitate to want to be part of it. They want to help. They want to get involved. They feel inspired, like they're also part of that connection, which is kind of what we're talking about earlier. I don't know who it was that said inspiration is infectious, just like desperation is infectious.
Well, the thing is, the thing that's interesting is that every human being wants to be authentic.
Right.
Right. You know, people say, if I went to Krugersdorp prison to speak. The headlines in the newspaper says Demartini returns to prison. That's what the newspaper says. but I went there to speak to 1,000 orange uniformed maximum security prisoners.
Tough prison.
Three stories underground.
Holy shit.
And I asked him, I stood up on a little plastic stool about a foot high. I had six bodyguards around me, the warden there, Al Jazeera television cameras there filming. And I said, how many of you, no matter what you've been through, no matter what you're going through, no matter what you've experienced, deep down inside want to make a difference in the world? Every hand went up within a billionth of a second in that room. Thousand.
Wow.
So it is innate to want to make a difference. Mm-hmm. But we only make a difference to the degree of authenticity. Because mm-hmm. the second we delude ourselves by subordinating to the outer world and injecting the values of others from anybody that we've given authority to, we cloud the clarity of our own mission and dilute our own individual expression and hold ourselves back from making the difference that we want. And so when somebody does make a difference, there's a yearning for every human being to want to rally around that and to be around that individual to learn and glean the insights on how to do so.
It's funny,
it magnetizes.
It's funny that you're saying that, and based on my observation of what's happening in the world where, you know, it seems at the moment that right from, you know, kindergarten, kids are now being told, you know, this whole identify thing. You can identify as this, you can identify as that, especially when the brain hasn't developed enough to fucking identify what a spoon is. You know, and it's amazing that it seems, and I know you would say to me, look, Mitch, it's always been happening. It's just very, very evident at the moment. But how do you see that? How do you see in terms of, you know, be authentically yourself. It seems that we're in some way being schooled not to, you know, to be something else.
Well, you don't become an Olympic medalist fitting in. You don't become a Nobel Prize winner fitting in. Mm-hmm. You don't become a world religious leader or political leader or business leader by fitting in. Mm-hmm. You do it by standing out.
Yeah.
And the majority of people... Ernest Becker, in his Pulitzer Prize-winning book, The Denial of Death, talks about conformity. And he says that human beings are frightened of dying. And the only reason they have fear of dying is because they're infatuated with the pride of who they think they are and the fantasies that they're holding on to. Because mm-hmm. I can dissolve those two for people that are having cancers and about to die in hospice and dissolve, and they can die beautifully. Mm-hmm. So the fear of death makes people go into their amygdala. And they go in there and then they actually are frightened of not fitting into the group. And they become part of the collective herd instead of being the individual. Mm-hmm. He said there's an individual hero and a collective hero.
Right.
The collective hero is the one that becomes a hero by fitting in and being part of the crowd. Everybody likes him.
Right.
Which is futile because the crowd is always pairs of countercultures. Mm-hmm. They can't please everybody.
Right.
But the individual is going to be both rewarded and attacked. Supported and challenged, and the individual who can embrace support and challenge equally in the pursuit of a cause greater than themselves is the one that leaves their mark and their immortal legacy. They're the ones that are willing to embrace the support and the challenge, the pain and pleasure. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, if you look at in our politics, and you know, you got crazy Trump, right? Mm-hmm. And so here's a guy that's both hero and villain to somebody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you can't embrace your hero and villain equally, whatever level of hero or villain you're not able to handle is the level you're going to go to. That's it.
Mm-hmm. Say that. Say that again. That's good. Say that again.
So let's say that you want to on a 10 scale, you have a hero at a 10 and you got a villain at a 10. But I don't want to be a villain. I want to be a hero at a 10. Mm-hmm. I only want to be a villain down at a 1. You're only going to grow to the 1 level because you're only willing to embrace that part of yourself. You know, the Buddha says the desire to search for that which is unobtainable and the desire to avoid that which is unavoidable is the source of human suffering. And people don't realize that the addiction to pride is the very source of their shame. Mm-hmm. And the reason they're addicted to praise is because they're frightened. They get frightened of criticism because of the addiction to praise. And the addiction to praise is what stops you from being authentic. Mm. So you won't grow unless you can embrace both support and challenge equally. That's why when I train people in the breakthrough experience, I say go to the moment where and when you perceive this individual displaying or demonstrating the specific trait, action, inaction you despise most, that you resent most. And in that moment, where are you and when are you? Mm-hmm. And at that moment, what's the content, the context? And in that moment, where is the equal and opposite? Mm-hmm. A fully self-actualized individual is aware and mindful of the pairs of opposites because all perceptions are contrast. Mm-hmm. And the moment you see both, you realize that the magnitude of the criticism is always balanced in the magnitude of the praise. Mm-hmm. If you see them both equally, you keep rising. But if you hold on to one and run the narrative and story of victim of history or fantasy, you automatically hold yourself back because you train your amygdala instead of develop your executive function.
Very, very good. One of the things I just wanted to ask about, and we've probably touched on it a little bit here, is that what I've noticed over time is that as we help individuals grow their wealth, right? So they go from $1 million to $5 million to $10 million. It seems that the priority of time and energy and where their mindset is and their learning, you know, they're two completely different friggin' people. But it seems that people try to get there without having done the work. You know, they try to pretend into that. And I'm okay with a little bit of lean in. You know, you got to fake it till you make it. I'm okay. I know Millsy hates me saying that. You got to fake it till you make it. But what do you see is the wisest steps to go from being able to operate from at $1 million level and sustain it to a $5 million level and sustain it to a $10 million level?
Well, if you do it impulsively, too quickly, without the psychological foundation for it, you'll probably go into your amygdala and get elated.
Right.
I wrote an article in Jet Set magazine. If people go into Jet Set magazine, go back quite a few years into the magazine, I made an article about what I call the 10% rule. The 10% rule says that when you have $1 million, you're now $100,000 net worth. When you have $10 million, you're now $1 million net worth. When you have $100 million, you're now $10 million net worth. Because your net worth is based on what you can endure the gains and losses of without an emotional reaction.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, I at one time when I first started saving and investing money, a fluctuation of hundreds of dollars or thousands of dollars used to cause emotional reactions. Mm-hmm. Then when it got to be the first million, then thousands or hundreds didn't seem to affect me, but tens of thousands started to affect me, and 100,000 definitely affected me. When I got to 10 million, hundreds of thousands didn't seem to affect me. That was a daily fluctuation. And now $1 million was starting to affect me. Mm-hmm. And then when it got to be 50 million, then all of a sudden $10 million fluctuations I can handle, $5 million fluctuations. I've handled $5 million fluctuations, mm-hmm. not a reaction. But a $10 million one I'm not ready for. Mm-hmm. So whatever you can handle without an emotional reaction tells you where you're really at. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And then I mean,
that's where you're really at.
It's also about, I notice over time, you know, you've, one of the objectives that we have with people is you've got to be able to be, your emotional state has to be congruent at that level. So the quicker you can turn up there before you arrive, the quicker it's going to find you. So,
well, that's it. That's exactly it. Because, and that's why it's a preemptive strike. if you are infatuated with what money is going to do, you screwed up.
Yes.
Right.
Because you're only able to handle that part of it.
Yeah, yeah. Anytime you're related, that's why every time you're related about something, you probably won't probably come true. So don't get elated. If you're related about what you think money is, you don't know how to manage it, because with it comes responsibility. And there's just as many pains. I have a friend that lives on the ship where I live who donates about $500 million a year on average. And he was telling me with his wife one night at dinner, he said, we spend as much time now selecting where we're using our philanthropy as we once did making it.
Wow.
So the degrees of responsibility have never gone down. They've gone up. So now we want to make sure we don't rob people of dignity, accountability, responsibility, and productivity. We now want to make sure that our dollars of philanthropy actually accomplish something that's truly meaningful for human beings. And that's not easy. It's not as easy as people think, because people can get skewed by economics, as you know. So when you know the pros and the cons of each level of wealth, you're prepared for it. But if you're infatuated with it, you're blind to the downsides, and it's going to broadside you. And if you're resentful to it, you will avoid it. Anything that you seek or avoid runs your life. Anything that you're envisioning inside your heart that you're inspired by, you run. You're grateful. What you're grateful and loving, run, you run. What you have an emotional reaction to runs you. And until you can manage it, as Warren Buffett says, until you can manage your emotions, don't expect to manage money.
So we have, we've been watching now since 2011, the emergence of cryptocurrencies. And I mean, the way I see it is it was only a matter of time. And I mean, the fluctuations are obviously the same as they probably were when our original currencies were created, you know. What is your view on cryptocurrencies?
Well, I did a research on that probably 2015. And I, in Japan, I did a presentation, a full-day presentation on that then. I saw problems with the technology. The original technology of blockchain had a dead end to it. You know, it was going to half every 4 years on the mining things, and which meant, and it was averaging 9%. And so there was no way something could continue to go that way without eventually becoming cost prohibitive. So the technologies have to evolve. Will we have a digital currency? I think that's coming. Do we have it the way it is now? No. Can we have 19,500 currencies? No. Could we have one that's run through some sort of government system that's pegged to some sort of stable system that has less fluctuations? It's coming. I don't think the technologies are yet there that make it efficient. I don't invest in those only because they're ungoverned still. You got people in there that are not necessarily kosher. You got organizations that are not legit. You got people that can know how to hack. And it's gambling because it's highly volatile. The people that are making money on it are dealing with the gambling fluctuations, most of it. I didn't put any money into that. I put my money into quality companies. There's a thing called zero-sum game, and there's non-zero-sum game. Zero-sum game means I win, you lose, and it's a fluctuating market, like a Forex market. I win, you lose, I lose, you win. And then there's non-zero-sum game where you're buying shares in a company that helps a company serve people more effectively, that allows a customer to win, the employees to win, shareholders to win, companies to win, families to win. I prefer to invest in true intrinsically valued services and products that are sustainable, that have a lifespan. I bought a peanut butter company 40 years ago. That company was around before I was born, and that company is going to be around after I'm dead. And there's more people eating peanut butter than there was back then. So I bought a company that I can be assured that will still be serving people long beyond my life. And it's averaged around 9 to 10% what I've earned from that. Every year, like clockwork, it goes up and down. But if you look at the average mean, it's predictable in that field. It's given me my yield. It's given my thing without any distractions, without any effort. and I'm helping people get their peanut butter in the world. So I want an intrinsically valued company that has sustainability to the best of my understanding. Now, the S&P 500 in America selects companies with that in mind, but there's a bit of turnover in there. There's about a 15% turnover in there. So if a person has no background in investing, that's not an unwise thing to at least start there. Right. I think that's why Buffett has his wife. That's how his money is going to be managed when he passes, right, put in the S&P and left there. So I've been buying indices for almost 40 years, 37 years, and buying very, very select companies that I'm certain are going to be around beyond my life. Mm-hmm. And buying those long term and holding those and keeping them long term. I don't flip, don't gamble, I don't buy and sell, I don't do any of that, because you erode your capital gains, you erode with emotions, you get distracted from your primary source of service. I don't do that. I keep it simple, and I've grown my wealth that way.
I think that's what I picked up from what you're saying there, is that it's about not having your focus on the fluctuation, so you can keep your focus on where your value is. What you're here to do.
Don't ever get distracted by a secondary source of income until the secondary source of income is greater than the primary source of income.
Yeah.
Focus on what I love doing. It. I love teaching, researching, writing, and traveling.
Yeah.
That's it. I'm useless everywhere else.
Yeah.
I'm useless. I stick to what my core competence is, and I do it every single day.
Yeah.
And I built momentum doing that.
Yeah.
And then I take my money and I invest it with people that are experts in their field, that have a track record, that have quality service, that's in sustainable fair exchange, and have a record to show it.
Mm-hmm. Can I just touch on, you know, with the economy being what it is now after everything that's happened the last couple of years, interest rate rises, things like that, and people panicking, what do you say to people in that state of mind with what's going on?
The only ones that are going to panic on that are people that have not managed their money wisely, mm-hmm, by having a reserve of capital.
Yes.
And have patience.
Yeah.
The interest rates are heading back down now in America. So we're going back down. The Fed's raised it up. They just did it again the other day. It's showing it's going down.
Right.
So the market's going to start rallying again.
Yep.
The doomsday, the doom and gloom or the boom and zoom mean nothing to me.
Mm-hmm.
Because when the market goes up, you make money on the past. When the market goes down, you make money on the future. Either way, I make money on the... As long as I have a capital reserve and I keep dollar cost averaging, I never even pay attention to those fluctuations.
Yeah, right. So that's exactly what we teach, is that when you're a master, you're not worrying about the fluctuations of what's going on. The experience of
temporary.
Yeah, the experience
of opportunities.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The experience of recession and boom are
momentary,
and the masses live in that space. When you're mastering and you keep your focus on your vision, that doesn't affect you.
No. I made the most money during when it's downtime. That's when you make the most returns.
Yeah.
Mm.
And so that's not a bad thing.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, if you go by extrinsic thing, it was Robert Prechter there that talked about, you know, socionomics. And talked about how people are swayed by the outside influence instead of having a strategy.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't have a strategy and you don't have a plan of action that's foresighted, you're going to be impulsively reacting with hindsight. Mm-hmm. And hindsight doesn't make wealth. Foresight makes wealth.
Mm-hmm.
So then another question, a little bit left of center. we know that peace and war are a natural part of everything that happens in society and over time. And, you know, we watched the Cold War in the early 80s, and I remember, like, I saw a video the other day. I remember videos being shown to us in Dublin. I'm from Dublin. And, you know, you were told, get under your table, da-da-da-da. So we've got this going on now. And obviously what happened was it got to the point where both sides realised, look, if I press the red button here, I may as well just blow myself up because it's suicide. What is your thoughts on Ukraine, Russia, and what's happening globally? Do you think it's just distraction, how you have a look over here? Or do you think, I know you're going to say, just keep your focus on your goddamn mission. Don't worry about that shit. If you're meant to be taken out, you're timeless, your energy, it's just how it is. But what's your throw on it? I know people will want to hear.
They're not going to push a nuclear warhead. They're going to threaten games to try to manipulate people as emotional blackmail mechanisms to do it.
Yeah.
Because you're not going to win by doing that. Yeah. You're going to have allies attack you, and you're going to end up accomplishing what? Mm-hmm. So that's not it. We have a John Nash equilibrium system in our nuclear warhead systems that keeps that in check. There's the advantages and disadvantages that are pretty well in check. I personally saw that it did impact the world because people are watching TV all day long.
Yeah.
If they didn't have the TV, they probably wouldn't even notice it.
Exactly.
But if it distracts you from what your primary objective is, making a difference in people's lives, you're not going to be doing well.
Yeah.
And then you blame it. The question you want to do is care enough about the world out there to find the people you can serve and concentrate on competitively, efficiently, and effectively serving those people in a way that's meaningful to you and focus on that. And as the markets are moving by these outward events, keep yourself resilient, adaptable to change. And now what are they needing? And how do I keep serving them what their new needs are?
Mm-hmm, right.
And if you do that, you're contributing to the solution and not focusing and dwelling and emotionally reacting to the so-called problem.
Beautiful. I love it. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I knew you were going to say that, but I just wanted to hear your view on it, anyway.
I just had a lady at my seminar the other day in Houston here who's had somebody who's from Russia.
Yep.
And somebody from Ukraine in the program.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And they were standing and listening to each other's story about it.
Yeah.
Wow.
They said, what do you think about this? And this is what I said to them. I said, I've been to both locations. And what I see is people who are there growing a family, trying to get ahead in their business, trying to upgrade their life, who care. And what we do is we allow politics and television with subjective biases, in-group, out-group biases, skewed, false positives and false negative information to skew us and distract us from knowing that every human being wants to get ahead in life and do what they can to raise their family and do move forward in life.
Mm-hmm.
So realize that the people in Russia and the people in Ukraine are loving individuals. Whenever I've been there, loving individuals that want to make a difference and want to contribute and care.
Right, right.
The politics of a few people playing games in politics is not the culture.
Mm-hmm.
We get a false attribution bias that that's the culture. And then we go against the culture instead of something that we haven't seen the benefits to. Mm-hmm.
So if that's the case, so I'm going to go down this path a little bit then. Why, because this, whatever's going on out there is in part there in order for us to grow, right? So if we're hearing this stuff in the news, we don't watch the news, our clients don't watch the news for the most part, but, so many people are affected by this and are affected by the games that are being played and stuff like that. Why is that so? Why is it evident at the moment in terms of that, and what can we do individually? I mean, I think I know the answer to that anyway, which is to focus on yourself and focus on your mission. But why do you think it's I feel like over the last few years that's been quite prevalent, that there's this outward influence about how we see things. I've said to so many people, if you turned off your television, the likelihood is you wouldn't know that COVID existed, right? Mm. Or if you turned off your television, you wouldn't know that XYZ was happening. So why do you think it's happening, and why do you think it's been so prevalent at the moment, in my view?
Well, sensationalism grabs attention in the amygdala. And I'm going to go off on a tangent here too.
Let's do that.
All right. The fastest way to disempower a group of people, to make them vulnerable and easy to govern, and to manipulate with propaganda, is to promote a moral hypocritical ideal that's unobtainable.
Mm-hmm.
So if I say to you, you need to be nice, never mean, kind, never cruel, positive, never negative, peaceful, never wrathful, giving, never taking, which is what your grandmother and your mom and everybody else has been taught to say, which nobody can do because we have both sides.
Yep.
When we are doing it, we feel proud. And when we're not doing it, we feel shame. And so we end up bipolar.
Right.
Bipolar condition is a byproduct of monopolar addiction, the pursuit of one-sidedness.
Mm.
Again, the Buddha says the desire for that which is unobtainable, one side, and the desire to avoid that which is unavoidable, the other side, is the source of human suffering. Now, the moment you feel unstable because you're pursuing something that's unobtainable and trying to avoid that which is unavoidable, you're going to offload your decisions because of the uncertainty, and you're going to be then controlled by what media and what government and what religions. This is something important. If you don't use the feedback of your physiology and psychology to guide you to homeostasis, you're going to use psychology, social psychology, and politics and theological religions to run your governance. Mm-hmm. If you don't govern within, autotelic, you'll be governed without, heterotelic. Mm-hmm. And people who are governed within listen to their physiology and psychology, don't listen to the world of society and politics and religion. Mm-hmm. And the people who are out listen to politics and religion and don't listen to their intuition and their physiology. Mm-hmm. One is a path of masters, there are few, and the rest under the masses, there are many. Mm-hmm. And this has been that way since recorded history. You have to make a decision. You have control over your perception, decisions, and actions. You can decide what you perceive, what you select in. You can decide how to perceive it, and you can ask questions that change your life. How specifically is whatever's happening, the Ukraine war, how is it helping me fulfill my mission? Mm-hmm. And if you answer that with accountability, you use it as an opportunity and as a resource. Mm-hmm. If you don't, you're going to be using it as an excuse, and you'll be a victim of history, not master of destiny. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Beautiful. I love that.
I think that's a good way to
Before we end, I have one more thing I just want to ask. We've been doing a little bit of study into the area of flow states, and obviously it's a hot topic, especially in the human development and human potential world. Have you done any research? Has it popped up in your room? I can see it nodding your head. Stephen Coulter, I don't know whether you've read Stealing Fire, and Coulter's stuff is awesome. They're talking about hacking consciousness, but my experience of the breakthrough experience, the equilibration process, taking people into that, shifting that innermost dominating thought, is the quickest way that I have personally witnessed and helped other people experience timelessness, selflessness, effortlessness, and richness. Can you lean into that conversation a bit?
Yes. There is two flow states, the true and the false.
Right.
The false one is a manic, elated state confused with the flow state.
Right.
It's a dopamine-driven manic experience that is surreal. Mm-hmm. And that manic state, many people confuse with spirituality and oneness and all kinds of things.
Right.
That's a dopamine-driven, oxytocin-driven, encephalon-high state and can mislead people and make them not appreciate the realities of life. Mm-hmm. And the true flow state is a grace state where you see the hidden order in the apparent chaos of the opposites. Mm-hmm. It's just like two gratitudes. When somebody gives you something you like, and does what you want and supports your values, you go, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. It's kind of a superficial thank you.
Yeah.
When somebody challenges you and then you take yourself and make yourself accountable to look at who's doing the opposite. In other words, if somebody is critiquing you, you must be cocky and challenging their value system. They're pulling you down. And the reason you're cocky is because somebody you're addicted to the praise of somebody else. And as long as you're addicted to the praise, you have to have the criticizer to break your addiction to grow. When you can see the hidden order in the chaos and you have a balance of the sympathetic, parasympathetic, the beta and the delta waves, and you get a perfect alpha rhythm that gives you a gamma synchronicity, now you have the true flow state. Mm-hmm. And that's not a hypocorticality that is misinterpreted as the flow state. Mm-hmm. That is a hypercorticality, complete organized state where there's governance. Mm-hmm. A synchronicity. When that occurs, the hypothalamus autonomically balances the sympathetic and parasympathetic feedback into the brainstem, activates the intracardiac network, and sinoatrially noted, it basically synchronizes the brain and the heart feels open. Mm-hmm. You literally feel an open heart, you get tears of gratitude, you have a eureka moment, and you're not elated, you're not manic, you see the perfect balance of opposites and you go, wow, I realize that this challenge in my life is exactly what I needed at this moment to balance out my addiction to a fantasy.
Right.
They brought me back into reality. So the true flow state comes in when you see the hidden order in what was the apparent chaos. The false flow state is when you get something that's supporting and making you feel high.
So do
and people confuse us.
So do you feel then, because I know when, so like if I'm mountain biking, so I do a bit of mountain biking and I'm, you know, I'm coming down a mountain at anything from 20 to 40 kilometers an hour. And I'm just, so I have to be, you have to be watching everything. And you get to the end and you feel that sense of like, I can't measure the time of what just happened there. I just know that I was in this space and, you know, I was the ground, I was the bike, I was the air, I was the forest, I was all of it. And so do you feel then, like it kind of sounds like, you know, as opposed to when, you know, if I'm working with someone, I'm equilibrating them, I'm getting to that them to that point, it's a very mind-orientated experience. I'm using the mind to hack and create a congruency between the head and the heart, and I watch the, I see it, and the tears come, okay. And so do you think then that they are two separate things?
When you're present, your heart opens.
Right.
When you're in equanimity, your heart opens. You can't open the heart with a judgment.
Okay.
When you're in a manic state, you're judging.
Okay.
And you're having an idea of bliss in the future.
Okay.
So when you're actually present and you became one with the scenery.
Yeah.
And you're not going, I'm now elated because I know I'm going to win that next race.
Yeah.
Cocky.
Yeah.
That could be the flow state.
Okay.
If you're manic and you're feeling proud or manic about the future, you're not present.
Right.
Manic future is not the flow state. Many people confuse it. Even books have been written around.
Yep.
And I've tried to outline that even books on flow, most of them are misleading.
I 100% agree.
Most of the books on infatuation are confusing it with love.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%.
Or excitement. Going and going, yes.
Yeah, I totally
That's
agree.
Not enthusiasm. Enthusiasm is a poised, mindful state where you feel the divine order is sitting in your life.
Yeah.
And you realize there's nothing to fix. See, if you're infatuated with something, someone, you're going to inject their values. You're going to want to change you to be like them, which is futile. Mm-hmm. If you're resentful to somebody, you're going to want to change them to be like you, futile. When you love, there's nothing to change. Mm-hmm. You don't. There's no futility. There's utility, not futility.
Yeah.
That's the flow state.
Yeah, I love it. Beautiful. I absolutely love it.
That was awesome. Thank you so much. That was so cool.
Dr. DeMartini, we absolutely love hanging out with you, brother. It's always great to see you. Great to see you're fit and healthy as usual. And
well, it's been 10 years since we did our first cruise on the Caribbean this year.
Oh.
10 years.
10 years has gone by, hasn't it?
I know, so quickly. So quickly. But you don't look a day older. Neither do we.
I was 58. I'm 68 in 2 weeks.
Wow. Yeah, really?
So I'm still cranking.
Yeah.
But I I've got a 50-year-old girlfriend.
Have you? Ooh. Have you? But you've always been like that, John. Come on. You've always looked at younger women.
Well, no. Athena, my wife, was older than me.
I know.
Than
Athena was, yeah. Yeah, that's true.
Athena was that. But since Athena passed, I had dated younger girls.
Yeah.
One was just a year younger for 5 years. But they've been younger girls because some of the other ones are either taken or they're not inspired. So
I love that.
They're winding down.
They're winding down.
Sorry, that one's taken. Angie's not inspired. You're right. But let's catch up again in the future. I trust everything is going really well for you, and I love hanging out with you. And we all do here. We were so grateful that you've given us this opportunity to chat again and touch people's lives. And let's keep motoring. I sat with you one day, and I was actually equilibrating you, and I remember at the end of the equilibration, you held my hands and you said to me, you said to me, we're here to make a difference. And I remember thinking, it was just a moment that truly changed everything. And it was like a piece of permission to go on and not stop. And I'm so grateful that I had that moment with you. It changed my life.
Well, thank you. Thank you for that feedback. I don't even know. We don't even know know what we do.
Well, it's that selflessness, timelessness, effortlessness, and richness, right? In those moments, you just it just is what it's meant to be. But I was
in London a few years ago, about four, I guess, and I was doing a little talk, I don't know, 300, 350 something people, just an evening talk. And there was a group of 50 people that looked similar. They're from Mongolia.
Right.
And so at the end of the talk, they all came up and asked if they could get a group picture. A whole group, 50 people from Mongolia.
Right.
And I said, so you guys are from Mongolia, a whole group? And they go, yeah. I said, what brought you to London? You.
Wow.
And I said, you came here for my evening talk? They said, we did. We chartered a plane, wow, came from Mongolia. We have a study group here. Wow. You have a whole bunch of study groups in Mongolia. You're very well known there.
Wow.
See, they don't have a copyright there, so they print the books. You don't even know it.
Right.
But so they came there, and it was such a tearjerker for me to realize that in a place so remote that people are very engaged. And you don't even know it. Mm-hmm. I have no idea. I didn't even know about it.
Yeah.
It's cool, isn't it?
It's awesome. Cool. It's awesome. It's awesome to, you know, that your life has just touched so many people's lives. It's just fantastic. And again, it's
well, you know, if you stay with something long enough, everybody dies out. You end at the top.
Yeah.
All I got to do is just stay alive. And now if everybody else dies out, he's still out there.
Yeah. Well, look, I can't wait to see it again and physically and give you an embrace, mate. I can't wait to see it physically and give you an embrace. All right.
We might close out the podcast and then chat for a second offline. Thank you so much, okay, Dr. John.
Thank you.
Appreciate that.
Even if you live the most extraordinary life, there is always more to learn. This is why tens of thousands of people are using MJB Seminars techniques to hack their consciousness and bridge the gap from where they are to where they actually want to be.
MJB Seminars use cutting-edge transformational processes that are science-based and backed to help people break through subconscious barriers and limiting beliefs in order to reset, reboot, and live inspired. If you'd like to know more today, Google search MJB Seminars Bridge the Gap. Click on the first link and watch the video.
Now, for simply watching the video, you will also receive a complimentary coaching session with one of our master coaches valued at over $600 to help you get traction in your life today. Remember, live life inspired.